This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Pressing Matters, the show that takes you beyond the headlines of the day. I'm Melissa Idris with Ibrahim Sani, and we are delighted to introduce Joyce Goh, Associate Editor of the Corporate and Capital Markets Desk at the Edge Media Group. She will join us on the show today. Good morning, Joyce.
Hi, good morning.
Okay. Hi. So the Edge has a slew of some, you know, stories and scoops on the banking sector. So let's kind of go through them. So this week, of course, the biggest news last week was the Nazir Razak voluntary leave. And of course, there was that huge press conference that was well attended by members of the press. You went as well, Joyce?
Yes, yes. It was last Monday. The news caught a lot of us by surprise in the morning. I think how it first started was, it was supposed to be an AGM. So, you know, normal AGM coverage, you know, the schedule was sent, who was going to go for the event and all that. Press conference was supposed to be 12:45. And then in the morning, got an update on my work group chat, heard that Nazir is stepping down. And suddenly everyone started, like you can see, suddenly analysts started messaging. So some of my contacts, did you hear Nazir stepping down? You know, and then turns out he told the board, I think that morning before AGM. And then at the AGM, he told shareholders. So after that, I think a lot of people changed their schedules. And
myself. Well, I remember being kind of shell-shocked and thinking, wait a minute, is this a hoax? What is going on?
We can safely say that this has caught the market by surprise at that moment in time. And I don't think he has consulted with any of the board of directors, because the board of directors reacted surprised as well.
I know shareholders were surprised.
So right now we can't really determine where that decision came from because it happened behind closed doors, clearly.
Yes.
But just, I guess, I'm surprised that, you know, Malaysians were able to keep a secret so well. Because
it really caught everyone by surprise.
The core question then is, how is the CIMB image following this voluntary removal of his position? Do you think that CIMB's image is for the better now that he has taken a step back? Or is it pointed towards a very negative limelight? Say, for instance, like MBank with that 700 million ringgit account.
I think when he first stepped down, everyone was surprised. And then once everyone got over that, when I spoke to some fund managers, analysts, and the investing public, I think they took it positively, as in corporate governance from perspective. But they say, oh, this is a refreshing for Malaysia. Because I think it's the first time, corporate, non-corporate, for this to ever happen. Everyone's like, is this really happening here? You know? So I think from that perspective, yes. Even when I went during the AGM, I went to Kepo before the PC, and some of the shareholders were out already, minum kopi, all that. So I went, hey, is it true? Nazir stepping down. And they're like, oh, yeah, you know, he mentioned at this. So, what do you think? And then straight away, what are you asking? Who are you?
Of course.
And then I introduced myself, and they said, oh, no, actually, it's good, because it's only for the review, you know, and they say not forever, but, you know, it's not permanent. That's what they said. But I think they took it positively as well.
Which is, I don't know about you, but immediately after it was announced and before the true details came out, you know, there was just the rumours and speculation that, oh, it was, for me, when I first heard it, it was news that Nazir had stepped down, and there was no mention of the word voluntary in that. And I think knowing that it was voluntary had made all the difference, knowing that he had opted to do this during the review process. Your article cites several people saying, you know, it was the right thing to do. It was very noble of him. And I think as the story progressed, that was the way he's viewed, right?
Yeah. So it still doesn't absolve him of a potential criminal action here. I think Money Laundering Act is still being looked at.
You're like the cold water.
I'm pouring the cold water.
Whatever halo we have on him, the effect is diminished.
Because while it is commendable for something like this to happen, and Joyce, you rightly pointed out, we haven't seen, you know, the likes of these kind of corporate accountability stability taking place in such a long time, if ever, right?
I think ever. I'm not sure, but yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
but it still doesn't absolve him from a possible criminal wrongdoing. And right. I think that, you know, if anything good that I want to highlight on this, it's that him removing himself from this picture allows for the necessary investigation or review, if you want to use that word, to take place.
Okay, so that lends a little bit more, you know, transparency, and you can kind of feel like, okay, it's independent, right? How long do you think that the review
will
happen?
It'll be a few weeks. They'll likely announce it in May. I think the targeting for May. I know for a fact that the investigations are ongoing now and everything's going on. So perhaps May.
So your article in this week's issue of The Edge is looking at the possible outcomes of CIMB's internal review. So you've spoken to several analysts about the possible outcomes following the
analysts review. And fund managers. Yes.
Okay. So, what are the possible scenarios that we're looking at here?
Actually, I reached out to some CIMB people as well. So I think so far there are a few, but three main ones. One would be it's positive, and Nazir is back to being chairman. Everything is status quo.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is that it's negative, and another one is that it's positive, but Nazir still decides to perhaps step down as chairman and take on a smaller role or an advisory role, right? Mm-hmm. And another one would be negative. And I spoke to Aberdeen's MD, Gerald Ambrose, and he mentioned that it could either be status quo or the reviewers might make recommendations to a change in some practices at the bank. But yeah, I mean, it's all along those lines.
Okay.
Of course, some are hopeful that if he does take a step back in CIMB, he will take on a more an active role in...
more like an executive kind of thing?
I know, a more active role in the public space. Some people are hopeful for that.
Oh, I see. So,
I don't know whether someone pointed out, he was very active in the social media platform.
Or Instagram.
His Instagram followers. I wrote the story. First, I wrote quite a bit on Thursday already. So his Instagram followers on Thursday was 47,300. So on Friday, when I updated the story, the Instagram followers went up by 147,400
wow.
in just a day.
Wow, not bad. Okay, so, you have to admit though, his Instagram posts make headlines. Next day you see he'll post something cryptic on Game of Thrones, and the next day it'll make headlines on the Malay Mail Online or Malaysia Kini.
And it's even picked up by, you know, Reuters and Bloomberg at one time.
Hashtag Instagram superstar.
Yeah. One thing interesting is that the MD of Aberdeen Asset Management, Gerald Ambrose, he made the dichotomy between what has happened in 1993 to what is happening now.
Mm.
Is there similarities?
No, what he was saying was because when I spoke to him, I asked him, basically when I first called him, I asked him, what are your thoughts on this whole CIMB Nazir stepping down thing that he shared with that? And then he said, hey Joyce, you know, actually I reported to him before. I'm like, oh really?
Oh.
Yeah. He reported to Nazir before in 93 when Gerald Ambrose was working in CIMB Securities in the early 90s. That's how this came about. And he said, so I said, oh, okay, so how was he as a boss? Right? And he said, oh, he was a good boss. And he said, you know, a lot of things were happening back then in the securities trading room and all that. And you could see, like, joy turn into tears instantly. But he said Nazir was very cool as a boss. Like, he kept a very cool headline, you know? So that's how this came about. I mean, that's when he revealed that, oh, actually, I worked for him before. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know that.
Is this a way of saying that because of his ability to keep cool under such stress and tension, this is the same case where, you know, even though we see this as, you know, market turmoil in terms of how he's reacting towards that reaction from that Wall Street Journal news, is it basically saying that, you know, Datuk Nazir is right now quite okay in terms of navigating this?
I think what he's also trying to say is that at 93, he didn't lose
his cool then.
During this time, when the funds or what, like bending the rules and things like that, I guess in 93, a lot of people did a lot of things.
I see. That's
so I think he was talking about that, about this funds as well. I think Gerald Ambrose was saying more to the likes of he thinks the outcome would be positive.
Okay, so EY is the audit firm. They're doing the review and CIMB expects it to be completed in a few weeks. So I guess we'll just have to keep an eye on whether or not Nazir Razak returns in status quo and the results of that review.
Yes.
9:45 right now. More on Pressing Matters in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. It's now 9.46 a.m. I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Ibrahim Sani here with me and also Joyce Koh, Associate Editor with The Edge Media Group. We're discussing some of the stories in The Edge Weekly this week. And one of the stories that you wrote, Joyce, was a focus on the loan loss coverage at Maybank and AMMB, as well as Affin.
Yes.
So how did you come across that? There was concern that there was a drop in loan loss coverage.
Yeah, I spoke to a few people on the ground and through my work. I mean, when I caught up with them, some of them highlighted that actually it started with Maybank. Someone pointed out that Maybank saw a huge fall in their loan loss coverage in December, dropping from 99.98% to 72%. So that's pretty big drop.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I went on to look at all the other banks, and of course, M saw a dip as well, and Affin. Mm-hmm. So yeah, then I wrote into all three banks to ask them about this and why the drop. And of course, some people pointed out Maybank being the largest bank here, they're also quite exposed to oil and gas.
Right.
And yeah, oil and gas is not exactly.
Do we know what sectors is occurring for these banks? Is it more of corporate banking? Is it more of commercial banking or consumer banking?
When I wrote into them, a loan loss coverage is more of like a rainy day fund.
Uh-huh.
Whether they have set aside the fund enough to cover for potential
non-performing
assets.
Loans.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter which sectors.
Yeah.
It,
but okay. Just that some pointed out oil and gas is so like very turbulent right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and whether that... So I checked Maybank. They have about 12.84 billion worth of loans to the energy sector. So that's about 2.76% of their total loans. That was for September 30th, 2015. December, they didn't share. But in their reply to us, they mentioned that their exposure to the energy sector, which includes oil and gas, has remained under 3% of its total loans for the last 2 years.
Okay, so they've acknowledged it and they've kind of responded to your queries, right?
Yes.
I guess it's a fair concern to have, especially if you think about, okay, well, there's a huge drop here. Why did it happen?
Mm-hmm.
And then you automatically kind of think, oh, okay, perhaps it's the oil and gas sector because that's one of the, you know, kind of red flags.
Yeah, some mentioned that perhaps you should keep a bit more
just in case,
they turn bad. Yeah.
So that was Maybank.
Yes.
What about M Bank?
M was 106% down to 94.8%, and Affin was 75.57% down to 64.03%.
So is it like going to be the kind of expectations for other banks in this industry as well?
Other banks
saw
their loan loss coverage go up. That's why I pointed out these three banks. And in Indonesia, when I was doing a bit of research in Indonesia, the Bank Negara equivalent there asked for all their lenders to set aside more funds to cover potential losses. So the OJK the OJK chairman actually asked the banks there to increase their loan loss provisions for, to all. 1.6 to absorb risks.
Okay, so we to have a bit of a kitty, you know, make sure that you have a sizable rainy day.
Yes.
Now, while the OJK there is asking for banks to actually improve or, you know, set aside a greater number of funds for these potential losses, do you see the same in Malaysia? Bank Negara issuing some sort of advisory as well?
Haven't heard anything, but if you look at the trend, a lot of the banks have upped their loan loss coverage. I think the rest, like Public Bank, has upped it. CIMB, RHB, Hong Leong.
Well,
the
Public Bank really beefed it up. I mean, it was 218 previously, and now it's 258%.
Yeah.
So I mean, they're clearly making some provisions there. Even the smallest bank, Alliance Financial Group, increased its ratio
by a lot. Actually, Alliance, 125.4% right now, right in December 2015, compared to 94.2 in 2014.
Yeah, so no reason for why the biggest bank in Malaysia should not have done the same, right?
But I think they're positive. I mean, different strategies are, I guess.
Okay.
For all, I mean, the banks, they have different strategies. So maybe for them, they feel because Maybank shared that they have intensified their efforts to monitor and safeguard their asset quality. Perhaps they're comfortable with that ratio, but we just thought, I mean, people are just...
Flag it up,
so
right?
We thought we'd just
One thing I would like to see is because of the fall in loan loss coverage at AmBank, when we saw that news this morning, TPG wants to buy into AmBank. I don't know whether that would affect the valuation of AmBank going forward. And I think TPG has a lot to discuss with Tan Sri Azman and ANZ, for that matter, if this deal was to go through.
Okay, Joyce, the other story that was a scoop on the front page of last week's issue was the fact that you came across a letter that Bank Negara had passed on to banks. And this was saying that to allow for some breathing space for SMEs to restructure and reschedule their loans.
Yes.
So how does that work? So SMEs who need to refinance or reschedule their loans?
Reschedule or restructure their loans, but they're still paying it. Those loans will not be tagged as impaired loans in the CCRIS, the Central Credit Reference Information System.
So previously, minute they did that, it was considered an impaired loan.
It'll be impaired, yeah. This was last year, Bank Negara changed the rules in April last year, where any rescheduled or restructured loans will be tagged as impaired. Mm-hmm. It'll be classified straight away as impaired in the CCRIS system. But recently, they sent a letter to the banks and saying that for SMEs, between January this year up until December next year, any rescheduled or restructured loans, which the SMEs will still be are paying, will not be classified as impaired under CCRIS.
So, I mean, okay, so many things come to mind. First of all, I don't remember this. I mean, was this made public by Bank Negara? Was this a kind of just a letter that they issued to banks specifically?
I think it was issued to banks specifically. I haven't seen it on their website or anything or public. Yeah. Perhaps sometimes they inform banks of different changes and things like that, but they don't inform it publicly.
Okay. But you see, there was a reason why these guidelines issued by Bank Negara last year asking these loans to be classified as impaired. It's because of the inability for them to pay in the first place early on. So does this change the risk profile of these borrowers? Right. And I think that is the core question. Risk management is going to be the central issue of the day.
Well, yes. my question is, who does it benefit, right? So is this protecting or giving space for SMEs, or is it kind of helping out banks because then they don't fall under the impaired
category? I don't know, they might help banks because of the risk management, right?
Yeah, I think in the letter to banks, Bank Negara did highlight to banks that although these SMEs are not going to be tagged as impaired, you as a bank still have to monitor them intensively, you know. So it doesn't mean don't look at them anymore. Separately, they still have to monitor and manage. They separately monitor the performance of the rescheduled and restructured loan and assess the impairment, total impairments required to absorb this. So banks, I guess, could be more extra work too.
Yeah,
because you see, to calculate the impairment provisions in totality on top of the potential credit losses that can come from these borrowers is still there.
Yes. This is to help SMEs, I guess, to get more financing. Because once you're
tagged as
right? Yes, cash flow. Once you're tagged as impaired, very hard for you to get funds anymore from other banks.
I see. Okay.
So it's good for the SMEs.
I'm not too sure
about the banks though.
Cash flow wise, it's good for the SMEs because it's easier to get loans.
So this is like Bank Negara, like Kasi Chan a little bit.
Kasi Chan.
Well, surely Bank Negara is going to be in focus again this week because of the announcement of the new governor. So far, no news yet. Again, I'm surprised at how
I haven't
well...
said yes. That's the reason why.
No, but again, I'm surprised at how the Malaysian financial industry can keep such good secrets lately.
Very good
at keeping secrets. 9:55 at the moment, and you've been listening to Pressing Matters on The Morning Run with Joyce Goh, the Associate Editor at The Edge Media Group. Joyce, pleasure having you as always.
Thank you. Thanks.
News is coming up at 10 on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.